Getting ready to buy or sell a home in 30, 60, or 90 days? Then check out BundleSelect.com to find out how you could save 20% or more on your entire transaction. Save on real estate, lending, and title. With BundleSelect.com, technology and a personal concierge are at your service to save you time and money. Bundle Select's hand-picked team of experts will compete for your business, so you'll save thousands of dollars by bundling all of these services. BundleSelect.com gives you all the control, including using your own realtor. I'm Joe Kucher with Real Estate Radio Live, and I have been on the radio educating consumers for years. By bundling services like real estate, lending, and title, you could save tens of thousands of dollars. Act now, and this new model could save you money on your move, lower your interest rate, or cover your closing costs. Visit BundleSelect.com. That's BundleSelect.com.
The estimated minimum savings are based on a comparison with a national average. Individual results may vary, and the estimated savings are not guaranteed. Bundle Select, Inc. is a licensed real estate broker. California Bureau of Real Estate Broker, license number 0046-6902.
Welcome to Real Estate Radio Live, an informative and engaging podcast discussing everything you need to know about the world of real estate. Your host, Joe Kucera, provides you with insight and guidance on how to buy, sell, finance, and invest in real estate. He also offers real estate tax management strategies, new construction advice, home improvement tips, and much, much more. And now, to guide you around the world of real estate, here's your host and Real Estate Radio Live team leader, Joe Kucera.
Welcome in, Joe Kucera with Real Estate Radio Live. Thank you again for following the show. For those that are following us on Facebook, thank you for continuing to do that. Just before we get started and invite my guest in, let me give you a couple of reminders. You could follow us, watch us, download the podcast is really the best way to follow the show. If you go to iTunes and just type in Real Estate Radio Live, you get the podcast that way, or you could just go to our website, reradiolive.com. You get the podcast. If you need to reach me during the week, a couple different ways to do that, 408-838-9060, or you could also email Joe at reradiolive.com. Most of you know the focus for over 7 years of the show has been education and information, and we work really hard to have great guests like today and good content and information. We'll continue to bring that to you on a regular basis. So with that, let me invite my guest in. Mr. Dean Rossi is with us today, and you were with us just a month or so ago, right?
Yes, maybe less so.
Good.
Thank you.
Well, I want to have him on a regular basis because a number of different things. Very, very good at what he does. And also this, we're going to talk today, Dean, a little bit about buyer and seller concerns in a market like this, and you're good enough to spend some time and cover some of these things. And there's a lot to talk about on a regular basis with real estate as it relates to legal issues or potential how to stay out of them.
There certainly is. Every day is a new day.
Yeah. Before we do that, why don't you, if you can, give the listeners a little bit about your background and then about your firm and then the areas of practice, and then we'll get started.
Thank you. Yeah. My firm is Ventura Rossi. I'm a partner at Ventura Rossi, and I primarily handle real estate and business litigation. Okay. I'd say about 90% of my caseload is litigation oriented. I think for me, I excel mostly in the courtroom and litigating and taking depositions. My practice, our firm, we do primarily real estate and business litigation. We have one partner who does employment law and one who does construction.
Perfect.
But primarily real estate.
Yeah, so you got all aspects of real estate covered here.
We
legally.
Do. We do.
All right. Well, again, this is the information we're going to cover today. I would say kind of a focus on if you're a potential buyer or seller, certainly, but not even that. The education of what we're going to cover today would be, it would apply to, you know, when eventually you get into this situation, or maybe you have a family member that's about ready to do this. And there is, this is kind of, as we dive into this before we do it, Dean, I think is, how would you call this kind of elevated or accelerated in a market like this with potential problems because of the environment we're in?
Well, one of the things we're seeing right now in this market is you're seeing one of the disputes that's coming through the door every day is where a buyer or a seller, they call me and they say, wait a minute, I need to get out of this contract, or I can't go through this contract, or I want out of this contract.
Okay.
So it's either the seller side, or the seller will say, listen, I want out because, and the typical reason might be because, you know, the market's increasing so much, the escrow is a little bit long, and the price is increasing, they want to get a higher price.
Right.
Oftentimes, you'll get actually seller's remorse. Mm-hmm. On the buyer side, you see the same thing. You see some buyer's remorse. You know what? I made this offer. I really didn't want to. But oftentimes, we're seeing in this market where these buyers are making offers because they have to or because they feel like they have to. they're making non-contingent offers, meaning they're making an offer without any ability to, for example, look at the property's condition or have a contingency to get out, or a loan contingency, meaning that they're not, their sale is not contingent upon a loan approval by a lender or appraisal contingency.
Yeah.
And so what will be happening is in this market, as you see it, every day you see multiple buyers coming in to make their offers more attractive. They're making an offer with zero contingencies, and they're making it above the list price.
Right.
And then there's a little bit of a bidding war, and they're going hundreds of thousands of dollars over the asking price, which is probably over what's called fair market value.
Right.
And so as a result is they make a non-contingent offer, and then they have their deposit
at risk.
Yeah. We'll talk about that. But what happens is they can't close escrow because a lender will say, wait a minute, I'm going to fund this loan, but I can't get the appraisal to the purchase price, and then they can't get a loan.
Yeah.
And then the question for what happens is they call me, what do I do?
Right.
What do I do?
You know, one of the things it's good to get the information from someone like yourself that deals with this unemotionally on the legal side is that, you know, we all know that the home purchasing, this whole process is very emotional for most people. Even if you've done it several times, it gets very emotional. And let's face it, you know, we'll be honest. I mean, a lot of people involved in the transaction have commissions at stake, and we make a living and all that kinds of stuff. So there are some people that are very, very good at this, but there are some other people that, you know, are – is the buyer and seller really being represented well, right? So how would you, I guess, categorize, or what would you say to the buyer seller listening to us today saying, you know what, really make sure when you're working with a real estate agent, you kind of check in and make sure they have these qualities or you have some conversations about them. How would you kind of categorize that going about trying to find the right person?
That's a great question. You know, my father always taught me in anything in life, always get three bids. And I always do the same thing with real estate agents.
Okay.
Interview three real estate agents. And I think you pay peanuts, you get monkeys.
Yep.
I really think you want someone who's experienced. And when you talk about experience, it may not be the person who can sell the most, the elite of the lead of the company. You want someone who's knowledgeable about the contract and who can also sell real estate.
Right.
So you want someone who's able to sit down with you and explain the purchase agreement.
Right.
I mean, if you, a simple example is the purchase agreement itself. Let's just take the California Association of Realtors form or the PRDS purchase contract. If you made it real font, made it an 11 or 12 point font, and you double spaced it, it's about a 34 page contract. And oftentimes these real estate agents will breeze through it. I want someone who's going to sit down with the client and explain, here's – it's a legal document.
Yeah,
here's
right.
what you're doing. Here's the ramifications. Here are the consequences of signing this. Here's what this means.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have any further questions, go see a lawyer.
Yeah.
Go see someone who can help you. I have clients, real estate clients, who go, look, hey, Dean, my client's a little, you know, unsophisticated. They have some questions. I can't help them. I don't want to give them legal advice. I want to spend an hour of your time walking them through the contract.
And that
happens
a great
all the time.
Idea. I love that idea.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, you know, you in California, the buyer is usually – it's probably one of your largest investments. I don't know what the median price is in the Bay Area, but it's got to be close to
1.1.
Yeah, $1.1 million for
entire,
a house.
Yeah.
And if in the entire Bay Area, that's insane. And why you won't spend $500 on a lawyer to
good
help
point.
You review the contract. I see the same thing as, well, let's not get a pool inspection or a foundation inspection. Why not spend $1,000 to get inspections when you're spending $1.1 million? It's insane. And the same thing that we get back to this conversation is, you're making an offer on property without the ability to have a contingency for a loan or have a property inspection contingency. And then, you know, when you make that offer to make it more attractive and you can't close escrow, that's when people give me the call. Help me. I'm in a jam. Help me get out. What can I do?
Yeah, I mean, I think the message you're talking about, which I think is wonderful, is prevention, you know,
right.
I mean? Prevention by purpose, right? In terms of, like you said, I mean, if you have those butterflies in your stomach and you're concerned, you're thinking, I'm not sure if I want to do this, or I don't even know if I understand it. The smart thing to do is go visit someone like yourself, take that load off your mind, because then again, what I like, it's totally unemotional. It's pure business. Let me tell you exactly what you need to know and prepare you for, and they're going to find something. I would believe that for the most part, they're always going to leave your office knowing a lot more than they did before they walked in, right?
Right. I mean, so oftentimes, you know, when I have a dispute, it's always this takes place at the conference room table or the kitchen table or the real estate agent sitting there reviewing the documents with them. And you talk about an emotional decision. I can tell you, I'm willing to bet that a buyer who looks at a property and they love it, they're emotional. Mm-hmm. They're not thinking about the property's condition.
No.
They're thinking
about
where the stereo system's going to go, how they're going to paint Johnny's room, where the nursery's going to go, where the pool's. They're not thinking about foundation and roof issues. And I really believe that in this valley we have such great real estate agents and some great companies who do sit down and review those things with them. But at the same time, I without a doubt, it goes in some ears and without and right through. And they don't hear what they're saying. Hey, listen, there's a problem with this, the foundation, for example, and you want to get an inspection. Here's what it means. You know, oftentimes I'll ask, I'm in a deposition, I'll ask the client, we'll get asked, you know, what was said at the meeting, and they say what was said, and you ask the real estate agent what was said at the meeting, and you get two totally and I bet you they both pass lie detector tests, right? I mean, they're both, that's their impression.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. Do you have any examples that you could share with us? You probably have millions.
Yes.
It's kind of as we're talking about the subject today.
Right. Well, I have one example that's going on that just finished, for example, where the seller sold a piece of property and the buyer came in and wanted to buy.
Okay.
And the buyer's house, the buyer couldn't get an appraisal.
I see.
And the house didn't appraise and couldn't get a loan. And here you had about a $50,000 deposit.
Okay.
So, of course, in this situation, the liquidated damage provision of the purchase contract was signed, which is simply a provision that says, hey, listen, if the buyer breaches, it's difficult to determine what the seller's damages are going to be. So, therefore, we're going to predetermine what those damages are going to be. And that's been determined as 3%, not to exceed 3% of the purchase price in a typical residential transaction. So in this situation, the first thing the seller says is, wait a minute, the buyer has breached, they can't get a loan, give me the 3%, give me the deposit, which is not really going to happen. There's a process you have to go through. So for example, in this situation, the seller has to relist the property and try to market it. You don't get it automatically.
Okay.
What happens is the seller has the ability or the duty to mitigate their damages, so they relist it. In this situation, they sold it for a little bit more money. And then the buyer comes back and says, hey, wait a minute. You sold it for more money. You can't get a windfall. Give me my deposit back. But then the seller says, well, wait a minute. Damages aren't just determined upon how I sell the house later on. So the way the law works here is the liquidated damage provision is presumed reasonable at 3%. And the presumption is it's reasonable. Mm-hmm. And therefore, if it's reasonable, the provision is valid. And a buyer, for example, here can try to say, well, it's invalid. And to prove it's invalid, you try to prove that the amount was unreasonable at the time the contract was entered into. And one of the factors you can look at to determine, it's a little bit odd, to determine that it was unreasonable at that time, is to look at a subsequent sale 6 months later.
Okay.
So here, for example, let's just say our hypothetical, we have a $1 million property, there's $50,000 in deposit, and it sold for a little bit more, sold for $55,000 more. The seller says, wait a minute, you didn't suffer any damage. Give me the $50,000 back. You made $55,000 more.
Mm-hmm.
So in the situation here, but the seller did have damages. The seller has carrying costs. They carry their mortgage for six months.
Right.
They had staging costs. Interest rates went up. You can see that. Now they it messed up their 1031 exchange. They had to pay utilities more. They had to, you know, pay insurance, taxes. So all of those things start adding up. And as a lawyer, what I'm trying to do is try to determine well, listen, are we in the is it an unreasonable number?
Right.
And there's no magic formula.
Okay.
You know, there's what is reasonable, what is not reasonable.
Right.
So in those situations, you try to negotiate. But I've had cases go all the way to trial on whether or not that was a reasonable amount afterwards. And you're fighting over things like staging fees and storage fees and, you know, interest rates going up. What my interest rates would have been had I been able to close escrow timely, but now I can't close escrow. They went up a little bit, and I can't get a 30-year loan. So those are all the things you're fighting about. And the seller side happens the same way. I had a case that went all the way to trial.
Really?
I had a case where a real estate agent was at a big company here locally, was working with a seller for years, 2 years.
Wow.
And decided to finally sell, and the seller sold, and the agent did a great job, you know, 4 hours reviewing the purchase contract with this seller.
Okay.
And then they opened the house, and they didn't get him any offers. The agent had told her, hey, listen, it's a little bit too high. I know you want this price, but you can't get this price. So they met again for 3 hours and mm-hmm. went over all the information of what the comments they were getting from open houses. They lowered the price a little bit. They got multiple offers. And they ended up selling the property for the most in the zip code at the time.
Okay.
And the agent did a great job. He made sure that the deposit went hard the next day, and there was a binding offer that evening. Next day, the seller says, I don't want to sell. I can't sell.
No.
I can't do it. I can't do it. It's my house, my whole life. I can't do it.
Wow.
And so what does the buyer do? No. I put seven offers in seven houses.
Right.
I lost them. There was bidding wars.
Right.
I finally won this one. No. Yeah. I want this. I want to get married in this house. I want to have my family in this house. So they all call me. So I represented the seller. I represented the buyer's agent and the seller's agent.
Okay.
And the seller went all the way to trial saying that, after 4 hours of going over the purchase contract and 3 hours at this meeting and 3 hours at that meeting, that somehow he pushed her into signing this contract. It became that, and she was distraught and she was incompetent and she couldn't sign the contract. So we went all the way to trial. And the judge ordered the house to be sold to the buyer, and the agents got their commissions, and later on to pay attorney's fees, which were, off the chart after 4 years of litigation.
My gosh!
So that happens, and that was clearly a situation where the seller tried to get out.
Do most people, Dean, as you walk through that? My God, I can't imagine that many years, for a transaction on a home, So do most of these, once they cooler heads prevail and people come to terms, or how many kind of go to trial versus you're able to settle?
Great question. I typically get hired for those cases that go to trial. I'm the junkyard
because you're
dog.
Good at it.
Right. I'm the guy who they're going to call to to really get it done. But they say typically 1-2% go to trial.
Okay.
And in this contract, we'll talk about it. We can talk about it right now. All of our contracts have a mediation provision.
Okay.
And so you are required before you file a lawsuit to go to mediation.
Okay.
And mediation is people, I have a lot of real estate agents who don't understand the difference between mediation versus arbitration. Mm-hmm. Mediation is simply you hire someone who has a skill of trying to settle cases and reach an amicable resolution.
I see.
The usually it's a retired judge. It can be a lawyer, for example, who has a skill of trying to get people together to find some common ground.
Okay.
The mediator's not making a decision, although they might give you an evaluation.
Right.
But they're not making a decision. Nothing's binding. You can walk away and say, I don't accept your offer.
Right.
And you go fight and go to arbitration or go to trial. It's kind of like having kids. If you have kids, as a mom or a dad, my kids always want sports equipment. I want the baseball bat and I want the baseball glove.
Right.
And you're saying, Johnny, can you trade it? Can you trade some baseball cards so we can give him the bat? And you find out the parent works a resolution. That's what a mediator does.
Yeah.
And the arbitrator is just the opposite. When I've had enough, I say, go to your room. I've made a decision. They told me their case. I said, you get your bat, you go to your room. And that's what a judge does in an arbitrator or a trial, which is different, where you put on evidence and you go to trial and the judge makes an actual binding decision that's binding on everyone.
Well, on the same token, we have quite a few real estate agents and people in the industry that follow the show as well. So on the flip side, so what would you, and I know you do classes in the real estate firms all the time, so real estate agent out there listening to the podcast today, what would you tell he or she some of the things to be aware of? Are they pretty much the same as a consumer, or they better be a little more diligent? Like on the professional side, should they be aware of?
Great question. We're all using the same forms.
Right.
We're all dealing with the same piece of property in the same county. Mm-hmm. We're all, I often say that real estate agents and I have a lot in common. Mm-hmm. We all deal with the same people. We're all dealing with the same property. We're all dealing with the same forms.
Contracts, yeah.
But we're very, very different. I'm good at what? I'm good at confrontation. I'm good at being adversarial.
Mm-hmm.
Real estate agents, they're not those things.
Relational. Yeah.
As a real estate agent, I always tell them, listen, read the contract. Mm-hmm. Find out what about this transaction makes it different from the last transaction or the next transaction. There's always something different.
That's true.
There's always one little – is it the school district? Is it the foundation? There's always one little thing. And I find that if you're not breezing through it – and right now I think people think, listen, the market is as such where you can simply put a sign in it and it sells like that, or you're going to have a buyer and it's going to be a smooth transaction. Right. It might be a smooth transaction now. But when you get to me, I don't make it a smooth transaction. Right. So it's almost keep your commission, a commissionectomy, like make sure you keep your commission really. So I always tell my agents, you know, spend some time with your clients and sit down with them and memorialize. Hey, listen, it was great meeting you. We went over this contract. Keep notes of what you did and really spend the time trying to figure out what's different about this transaction.
Right.
And it, even with the most sophisticated, you just said it, it's an emotional decision. Mm-hmm. When people are emotional, they're not making the right choices. What they say, never make a decision when you're angry.
It's true.
It's not angry. It's never make a decision when you're emotional. Because anger is just an emotion like any other emotion, right?
True.
So when you're emotional, emotionally buying a house, spend the time to make sure they try to understand, you know, what they're signing and why they're signing it.
Okay.
And that's really the law.
Yeah.
The law says that a real estate agent owes a fiduciary duty to their client, the same duty I owe to my clients. And you have the obligation to put yourself – I mean, you're, an agent is hired for what? The professional knowledge and skill.
Right.
And they're supposed to put themselves in the shoes of the principal and ask themselves the questions that they'd want to know as a professional and then do that necessary research, investigation, counsel, and advice.
Very good. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to discuss more with Dean Rossi. If you're with us on Facebook, stick with us because we're going to just take about a break for about a minute in order to do a commercial here, but then we're going to come back and finish up with Dean Ross. We were talking about really kind of the buyers, sellers in the marketplace, how it's heated up, how to handle some of these conflicts, really how to prevent some of them in many cases, and better yet, how to educate yourself both on the buyer side and the seller side. I'll be back with you to continue in just a couple minutes.
For more information on today's program, visit reradiolive.com. That's reradiolive.com.
Getting ready to buy or sell a home in 30, 60, or 90 days? Then check out BundleSelect.com to find out how you could save 20% or more on your entire transaction. Save on real estate, lending, and title. With BundleSelect.com, technology and a personal concierge are at your service to save you time and money. Bundle Select's hand-picked team of experts will compete for your business, so you'll save thousands of dollars by bundling all of these services. BundleSelect.com gives you all the control, including using your own realtor. I'm Joe Kucher with Real Estate Radio Live, and I have been on the radio educating consumers for years. By bundling services like real estate, lending, and title, you could save tens of thousands of dollars. Act now, and this new model could save you money on your move, lower your interest rate, or cover your closing costs. Visit BundleSelect.com. That's BundleSelect.com.
The estimated minimum savings are based on a comparison with the national average. Individual results may vary, and the estimated savings are not guaranteed. Bundle Select, Inc. is a licensed real estate broker. California Bureau of Real Estate Broker, license number 0046-6902.
Welcome back to Real Estate Radio Live. For more information on today's topic or guests, just visit reradiolive.com. That's reradiolive.com. Again, your host for today's edition of Real Estate Radio Live, Joe Kucera.
Welcome back in. Joe Kucera with Real Estate Radio Live. Thank you for those that are following us on Facebook. Appreciate that very much. With Dean Rossi today, he's in studio. We're talking about just the market, buyers and sellers, some of the things to be aware of, to potentially stay out of problems. There's so many things that go into this, but really what's accelerated as I started the show when I talked about this and really hyped up around these days is it's a market that there's super low inventory, Dean. So, you know, it's supply and demand, economics 101, right? I mean, it is just what it is.
Right.
500 listings or something in the entire county. I mean, it's amazing.
Right. It makes it more competitive.
Right.
And therefore, again, everyone's going to try to make their offer the most attractive as they possibly can.
Right.
And then, therefore, they're not going to have things like the easiest safeguards, like a property inspection contingency, for example.
Yeah. And I think just the part that I want to spend a couple of, not maybe, I think, because I'm a big fan of education and information, just I tell consumers all the time, we don't want you to be an expert. Right? That's your job. That's a real estate agent job, whatever you do. But you should be informed and educated enough so you could ask these questions, figure out what you're doing, read what. And I guess my point there is, you know, as a consumer, try to be prepared the best you can and go in not with complete blindfolds, because, you know, would you, your advice to a consumer, in other words, some people go, you know what, I'll just trust my real estate agent and or whoever. And that's fine if you have that kind of confidence. But what would you say to the consumer in general to have some kind of knowledge of what you're
right.
getting into? Not
well,
to be an expert, but...
No, I mean, I think I've heard this example before where there's a real estate agent here in town mm-hmm. who does a great job, and they actually give the contract to their principal in advance. For
okay.
example, hey, listen,
yeah.
this is a contract we're going to be using.
Good idea.
Take some time looking at it, mm-hmm. and let's talk about it. So it's not a surprise,
right.
you know, at the time we receive 10 offers and we're going over mm-hmm. for the first time. Take a chance to look at it, grab a glass of wine,
yeah.
sit there with your significant other and sort of read through this mm-hmm. and ask me if you have any questions. And I think knowledge is power.
Right.
I think I always started for as a lawyer, as a real estate agent, you always talk about what does the contract say? And mm-hmm. I think anyone you know, can at least sit down and try to muddle
right.
through it. You may not understand the ramifications of everything, but you can ask the question, what does liquidated damage, what
right.
does liquidated
what does
damage
mean?
What does mediation or arbitration mm-hmm. mean? And then you can start asking the questions, I don't know what this means, and get an answer. And I think knowledge is power here.
Yeah, it yeah. is. Let's talk a little bit about this dual agency. I like to just bring it up each time you're in, just because it's worth mentioning. Give us your take on that. For
right.
those that aren't really familiar, maybe you could actually give the consumers kind of an idea what that means and what a typical transaction should look like, and maybe one of the reasons why you would, you know, advise against it.
Well, dual agency is simply this, is where you have one agent, let's just take Brokerage A,
okay.
is working for both the buyer and the seller.
Okay.
Now, in California, even if the real estate agent themselves is different, you have John and you have Sue, real estate agent, and Sue is representing the buyer and John is representing the mm-hmm. seller, but they both work for a agency. There's a dual agency.
Really? So that's something to point out, because I've heard people say in the industry, say, you know what, I'm just going to give it to Jim in my office or Joe in my office instead, and I'll be okay. So you're saying no.
Agency is tested at the broker level,
okay.
not at
okay.
the agent level.
All
and
right.
cases have recently come down that go to show in a dual agency situation.
I'm glad you brought that up.
The agent for the buyer will have duties to the seller.
Mm-hmm.
And so and the law will actually transpose that you're supposed, as a dual agent,
mm-hmm.
you're supposed to disclose to the principal everything except what the buyer will pay and what the seller will sell.
Okay.
Everything else, by law, almost transmutes back and forth between mm-hmm. between the buyer and the seller. So it's important as a dual agent. I don't know how you do it. I mean, the legislature allows
right.
it. They definitely allow it. I can't do it. I'm not sure how I represent both the plaintiff and the defendant in a case and asking who am I
yeah,
rooting for, right?
Right.
The example, Tom Brady can't play for both sides of the team, both teams. It's not going to happen.
Right.
So the legislature allows it. As a lawyer, whenever I get it, I start drooling.
Yeah.
I love it because
okay. it's, you know,
something's
yeah.
going to go wrong here. Because
yeah.
if something wasn't disclosed, here's a classic example.
Okay.
You have a real estate agent who has the duty to review the disclosures, for example,
mm-hmm.
and they're reviewing the transfer disclosure statement about the condition of the property.
Okay.
And there's a blank. Seller, are you aware of any leaks to the property? And the seller checks yes, and there's no explanation.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so you have the duty as a real estate agent to say, hey, listen, Mr. Seller, where is the leak? The law says and the document says that a real estate agent is going to inquiry or ask questions mm-hmm. to the seller about the condition of the property. So let's just say that doesn't happen. It's left blank.
Right.
Then you go to your buyer client, and the same agent sits with their buyer and says, let's review this document together. Let's see what the condition of the property is, especially now in mm-hmm. a non-contingent offer situation
right.
where you're buying the property as is. The documents that's going to be looked at the most are going to be the disclosures. And let's just take the example. The real estate agent who represents the seller is now representing the buyer with the buyer, reviewing mm-hmm. the disclosure, and this is left blank. There is a leak, and there's no mention of where the leak was, how much was mm-hmm. it, was it fixed, who fixed it, what was the damage, nothing's disclosed. Mm-hmm. So there the real estate agent's really in a problem, both with the seller and with the buyer potentially,
okay.
because they're representing both sides.
Yeah. So if, again, consumers listen to this podcast and they come across a situation where the real estate agent's saying, hey, you know, I think I could do this, and they give them reasons why, you would say, again, that's typically a red flag. Start asking questions.
There are agents who can do it. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, that's true.
I just think it's dangerous. I think you're running
too much potential problems.
Too many potential problems, exactly. And then who are they really? Again, in this market, you're really dealing with price.
Right.
Of course, you know, real estate agents love if it's not 3%, it's 6%, right?
Yeah, that's right. So against that, so keep away, stay away from that. What other things do you think, as we sit here today, that we maybe you could think of that the consumer from their side be aware of, be careful of, other than the stuff we've talked about? I know we talked a little bit before the show, Dean, about how, you know, a market like this, if you're putting – you know, let's call it 20% or less down. Boy, oh boy, someone I know on the lending side, I'm having that conversation right away with people.
Right.
Big red flags, lights going off. Be careful.
Well, we've talked about this before. I think a lot of the cases that come to the door talk about the condition of the property.
Okay.
You're buying something that you didn't think you were getting.
Mm-hmm.
And as a buyer, it's an emotional decision, and you're spending a lot of money, and then you learn, wait a minute, there's a problem. Whatever it is, there's a child predator next door, there's a problem with the roof, there's rattlesnakes in the backyard, whatever it is. You're buying something and you didn't know what you're buying.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get angry, and then people call a lawyer to say, hey, listen, how do I handle this?
Right.
So, and then it's like anything. You're sort of setting up expectations. If you buy a property for $1 million or 1.1, and you're aware, hey, listen, there's going to be a roof leak here, and I'm going to have to repair the roof in a few years. Well, you set up expectations already, so you're not going to be alarmed. There's not going to be this a big emotional thing. What you find is you're buying something where the seller doesn't tell you everything, or you didn't read it and didn't understand it, or you weren't told or given the opportunity to inspect it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's hard for buyers and sellers. I mean, sellers, listen, I sold a piece of property years ago, and I walked around with my dictaphone trying to check the box yes. And I woke up one night, oh, my goodness, did I disclose that roof leak? That was back then. I woke up, and I ran to my attic and pulled it. Okay, I disclosed that because I didn't want to be lawsuit. So you forget.
Right.
So it's important if you're a seller, I think, to spend the time to tell it all.
Right.
For example, I did some work that was I hired a handyman.
Okay.
Wanted to put something in.
Right.
Put in a window.
Mm-hmm.
So I disclosed. I put in a window. I didn't get a permit. I'm not sure if it's to code. Here's the handyman's name. Not sure if he's licensed or not. Here's his number. Give him a call.
Yeah.
And give the information to the buyer to make that well. Again, you want the buyers want to make a well-informed decision.
Right.
And the real estate agent is there to help them make a well-informed decision so you know what you're getting.
That brings up a question because this comes up a lot, and it gets interesting what you are supposed to and not supposed to disclose when you sell a home. For instance, where is the line, or is there, or is it good judgment, or is there a list of things like what you need to disclose when you sell a home? Death in the house, a car ran through the fence and went into the pool. By the way, that happened to me several years ago in my own property.
Right. Disclose. The short answer is disclose.
So
I mean, you raise a bunch of things. Death, for example, by statute, it says 3 years. You don't have to disclose more than 3 years.
Okay.
There's some rules about that. But I've received inquiries, for example, from, hey, you know, about 7 years ago, someone died and they got shot on the front lawn. And do I disclose that? Well, legally, you may not want to, but I think in this market, the discussion was more like, hey, listen, is it really going to scare away a buyer if this happened so many years ago and wasn't related? So I think the rule is always going to be disclose. And these forms, for example, they have these 8-page forms. You have the transfer disclosure statement, which is required by law. Mm-hmm. It's a Civil Code section 1102. Says it's a 3-page form. It's 2 pages by the seller, and then the real estate agents fill things out as well for 2 different sections. And then you also have the more comprehensive. And I think just about every issue is on there. It's a great checklist to go through. And there's also these buyer's advisories. PRDS has one, and so does CAR. And they're a great checklist to think about issues that you want to be aware of. I mean, they list everything under the sun that could possibly be an issue with your property. So on the disclosure part, as a seller, I would make sure you really look at that form and you really tell the who, what, when, where, why. I had a great case years and years ago where the seller disclosed that there was blue-belly lizards on the property. And everything was disclosed. It came to the disclosure of about a landslide. And it said, old landslide repaired.
Yeah.
That's what it said.
Really?
They didn't say that it wasn't really 100% repaired. Then there's 15 reports down at the county you could go look at to see where this landslide was, right?
Yeah.
So the seller didn't tell all. The seller told just a little bit enough. The old landslide was repaired. Of course, the real estate agents didn't ask, where was the repair?
Oh.
How was it done?
Okay.
Who did the repair?
Okay.
Are there any reports? So as a buyer, you're led into maybe a false sense of security because the seller is telling you about blue-belly lizards on the property, and they're telling you about this old landslide that was repaired, and no questions were asked. So we were involved in this litigation that went all the way almost to trial about, you know, the real estate agents failed to even go look at the landslide, the fix, to see what was there.
Right.
In fact, I'll never forget that. I was in deposition, and I asked the real estate agent, why didn't you go down and look at it?
Yeah.
And it wasn't far. It wasn't a big piece of property. And the answer was, I didn't want to get my shoes dirty. Now, I used to work at Lady Salon Shoes at Nordstrom when I was in college. So
Speaking of full disclosure.
Yeah, so I had to ask. I had to ask the question. The question was, what kind of shoes are you wearing?
I love it.
And the answer was Ferragamo.
Yeah.
So if Ferragamos wasn't in every question, it was in every other question. And you're wearing your Ferragamos. So, no, but tongue-in-cheek here, but to be serious, it's really important if you're a seller to disclose all, and if you're the real estate agent for the seller, make sure those forms, because you know you're going to avoid litigation. Real estate agents, for example, I bet you the number one source of business is referrals.
Yeah, absolutely.
And repeat customers.
Yeah.
And if you have a happy person in a transaction, they're going to refer you.
Right.
So, and if you have a seller, for example, who gets into a lawsuit, they're going to blame the real estate agent, or at least the lawyers are going to, right? So I think it's important to go the extra mile to make sure those questions are answered. And same thing on the buyer side.
Good point. We have a couple minutes left before I ask you one more question before. If you could give the listeners, give the people obviously watching and listening later to the podcast, if someone wants to your expertise, reach you, what's the best place to do that? Phone number, website, email?
Right, probably just my email address.
Okay.
D Rossi, the letter D, and then for my name, Dean, and Rossi, R-O-S-S-I, at Ventura Rossi, V-E-N-T-U-R-A, Rossi.com.
Very
D
good.
Rossi at VenturaRossi.com.
And Dean is also on our website, so if you happen to miss it or if there are times that you need someone, you could always go to RERadioLive.com for that information. The last thing before we duck out is we talked a little bit about it's worth – sometimes you get in a competitive situation, or maybe let's say the buyer needs a little more time, and then the selling agent will say, well, what's our strategy? And then, well, I'll tell you what, you know, they put a 3% deposit. Let's see how serious they are. Let's get them to increase their deposit.
That's a great question, because oftentimes the buyer will put in 3% because we talked a little bit about, and if the liquidated damage provision is initialed, the maximum a seller can get from the buyer is 3% of the deposit actually paid. It's actually paid. And if it's more than that, you won't get that. You have to return that as a matter of law.
Okay.
It's in the contract that says that as well. But in a situation like this, oftentimes a buyer will make a deposit, say it's 3%, is $30,000, and then you're negotiating back and forth, and the purchase price, and there's a bidding war, increases by $200,000, which is not unheard of in this market. And therefore, the initial deposit of $30,000 is not 3%. I really think it's important for if you're representing the seller to make sure you do that that request for increased deposit and get that signed and make sure that 3% gets in there, because that's what you're gonna be relying upon if that provision is signed. If it's not signed, the measure of damages is different.
Right.
It's not the 3%. It's going to be the difference between the contract price and what the value is at the time you enter, at the time of the breach of the contract.
Right.
So oftentimes that can be a bigger number.
Right.
Oftentimes I get that question, should I sign it? Should I initial it? Should I not? It just depends on the market conditions and what you're looking for.
Okay. All right. We're going to wrap things up. Dean, I want to thank you as usual. A lot of good information, really good. And we'll have him back in a month or so when he has some time. We'll keep this up. Again, for more information, go to reradiolive.com and download the podcast. Continue to follow us. Until next time, have a great afternoon. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Real Estate Radio Live. For more information on today's program, visit reradiolive.com. That's reradiolive.com. Subscribe to our podcast. Discover more at reradiolive.com.